This is Dave Gahary on the corner of Wall and Fraud. Last week we commemorated the 3-year anniversary of the peak of the NASDAQ Composite Index with Harvey Houtkin, the father of day trading, who made stock trading, for better or worse, available to John and Jane Q. Public. Today, we will explore the consequences of this dramatic rise and decline of the U.S. stock market. To help us understand this, we are joined by Dean Baker, the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Dean, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks a lot for having me on.
Dean, you're the co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Who are they?
Well, we're a new think tank that got started in Washington, D.C. We set the place up in December of 99, and what we try to do is get information out there accessible to people so that they could use it. Economics is very, very important in people's lives. It determines, you know, whether people have a job, whether, you know, they can afford their health care, whether they can afford their housing. But very often the discussions are completely mystified so that, you know, everyone thinks they don't know what's going on. And what we try to do is analyze the arguments and get them out to people in a way that's accessible.
Right, and on the website, which is www.ceper.net, is that correct?
That's right.
Yeah. It says you're funded by, 85% of your funding comes from the Ford Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, a couple other ones, and 15% from individual and institutional donations.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. We've been lucky. We've gotten with the foundations before the market collapsed and their endowments went with it.
Okay. Yeah, and getting right to that point, on March 16th of 2000, just 6 days after the peak of the NASDAQ Composite Index, you were quoted as saying, "The main feature of the new economy is a stock market bubble of unprecedented magnitude. When the bubble bursts, the new economy will be just a bad memory." Now, you were right on, but for the purposes of educating the audience, what exactly is a stock market bubble, and how did it inflate and deflate?
Well, the idea of a bubble, a financial bubble, in this case is in the stock market. There's also, by the way, a housing bubble. There have been bubbles in other assets in economic history. The first one that people talk about is in tulip bulbs in Holland in the 17th century. But the idea is that you get prices that just start feeding on themselves where there is no underlying logic to the price. And in the case of the stock market bubble, in principle, the price of a stock is supposed to be determined by the value of the company, which in principle is the profits it can earn. Now, none of us know the future. We don't know exactly, you know, how much profits, you know, Microsoft or General Motors or the market as a whole is going to be able to produce in the next, you know, 5 years, 10 years. But we do have some idea. And the reason why I was able to, and really anyone who looked at it, I don't have a special crystal ball. I mean, this isn't my brilliance. It's really other people's negligence. Anyone who looked at it, we had predictions of profit for the economy, and there was no way when you had, you know, the NASDAQ at its peak over 5,000 or even most other companies, there was no way that any plausible path of profits could have justified those stock prices.
Yet it was allowed to continue.
That's right. And, you know, people treated this, you know, I was running around at that time going, look, these numbers don't make sense. And I was involved in other debates. One issue, I did a lot of work on Social Security. And I'd be talking to these people and I'd go, look, you know, this is a distant problem. You know, the fund is sound for now. You know, 20, 30 years out, we might face some shortfall. I go, don't you think it's an issue that we have trillions of dollars in paper wealth on the market that are going to disappear? Because it doesn't make sense.
Right.
And I could not get economists to look at that. They're just like, well, go bother someone else.
Well, Robert Shiller did. He came out with that book, of course, Irrational Exuberance.
That's right. He was one of the very, very few. You know, he was out there saying this doesn't make sense. And, you know, it was a welcome voice, but unfortunately, you know, very much a lone voice.
Right. So besides the Wall Street money machine, who benefited from the bubble being inflated?
Well, there were a few people. Certainly, you know, the people that were able to get in and get out. You know, if you were a sharp character and you started a dot-com or you bought a lot of stock in, you know, a dot-com or a tech company and were able to get out before 2000, you know, you made out you were golden.
Right.
You know, the Wall Street money machine, of course, they're making a fortune simply on, you know, the buying and selling of stock, you know, so you have companies, new issues, they'd come out issuing new shares, right. And they make a lot of money on that. The sales of shares, they make a lot of money on it. On top of that, there was a mythology created. It was very dangerous. I mean, I was mentioning a moment ago with Social Security that, you know, those of us who, were, you know, it's a good program, it's done what it's supposed to do, it keeps people out of poverty. It was very hard to make that case back in, you know, 98, 99, 2000 when people saw the market going through the roof because they thought, well, you know, I'll just put my money there and make a fortune. Who cares about Social Security?
Right.
It really warped, you know, it wasn't just Social Security, but warped people's thinking about the economy. So, you know, that was potentially very, very dangerous. Thankfully, due to some fluke incidents, you know, we managed to get by, keep Social Security intact. But it was a close one.
Right. So politicians obviously did not raise a stink about this bubble being inflated, and many people believe that Alan Greenspan, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, in fact, helped to inflate it. It seemed that the Senate was preoccupied with studying the effects of day trading. We were talking about that last week,
yeah.
The Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. The Senate's highest investigative body conducted a hearing on day trading, but nothing on the bubble.
Yeah, and it was really, you know, it was really just across the board, a combination of ignorance and negligence. And, you know, if we look at the economy today, the slump we're in is the direct fallout from the bubble. And, you know, I am no fan of George W. Bush, and I will, you know, attack him on any number of issues.
Are you kidding me? We're all fans here.
We're all fans.
Yeah,
I know,
right,
I know, of
yeah.
course. But you know, the fact of the matter is, this really was the Clinton-Greenspan bubble, and they basically set the scene for a shipwreck. George W. Bush, the analogous figure in history, is Hubert Hoover. Hubert
right.
Hoover did not, you can't blame him for the Depression. What you
right.
can legitimately say was he didn't know what to do. He didn't
right.
respond effectively. But, you know, the framework, the setup, came prior to his even taking office. And, you know, really it was Clinton, Greenspan, his Treasury Secretaries. Robert Rubin today is still the toast of the town. Robert Rubin should be in hiding. I mean, he either did not recognize the bubble, which you go, what was the man being paid to do? Or seeing the bubble, he thought it was just much cleverer to sit around and just let it continue to expand out of sight rather
right.
than try and rein it in.
So Robert Rubin was the co-head of Goldman Sachs, and then he went on to become the Treasury Secretary, right? And then he went on to some kind of a post over at Citigroup.
Yeah, he's one of the top positions. I couldn't tell his exact title, but he's one of
right,
the
he's got kind of an ambassadorial title. He was kind of paid off for dismantling Glass-Steagall, I guess, in a lot of people's eyes. So you're saying that Clinton and Greenspan actually facilitated the bubble, and Bush, the number 41, right? Is it then? He's 41, right?
That's right.
Yeah, 41. He's kind of in a position like Herbert Hoover was during the Depression.
Exactly. I mean, it's, you know, it would have been a big problem. There's no easy solutions, but the point is, you know, he has no idea what to do. All he could say is give more money to rich people. I mean, that's not an effective solution, but that's the only thing that seems to be on his agenda.
Right. Of course. Now the bubble deflated. States are coming in with deficits that have never been seen before. They are in the worst shape that they've been since the 1940s and 1950s. What's going to happen?
Well, it's a very bad time. You know, it's, you know, and again, this is where certainly you could blame Bush, because, you know, an obvious thing to be doing right now is to be giving money to the state and local governments that, you know, they have to balance their budget, better or worse, it's in their constitution. So they're sitting there with huge deficits. So at a time when we're either in a recession or at least a period of very slow growth, you have the state and local governments, you know, cutting spending, raising taxes, the exact opposite of what they should be doing for the economy. And as a practical matter, cutting spending means taking away people's health care, taking away their access to housing in some cases, cutting back schools. In Oregon, they're closing their schools early. So you have the absurdity of, you know, just last year, you know, everyone's celebrating we're going to have more federal aid to education. But because the state and local governments don't have the money, they're cutting back.
Right.
So, you know, it's going the exact opposite direction. And, you know, you can get to some finger-pointing. You know, a lot of people messed up, and this is one of the things that is just kind of mind-boggling. You know, when a custodian doesn't clean the floors, when the waiter drops the dishes, they get fired. But we have a whole nation full of people that it was their jobs to make budgets, to make projections, to you know, manage pension funds, you know, to give advice on stocks.
Right.
almost every last one of them was completely out to lunch, and almost every last one of them still holds their six- and seven-figure paying job.
That's right. As a matter of fact, I was going to mention this. Today in the Wall Street Journal, there's a story about Merrill Lynch's CEOs getting, I think, $7 million in pay. I mean, now,
yeah,
today,
I mean,
today, Kamansky and O'Neill, $7 million pay package. And if anybody out there who's listening to this program is still doing business with Merrill Lynch, you might want to think twice about that. It's incredible.
It is, and it's just, you know, you go, well, what does failure mean in these people's worlds? You
there
know?
Is no failure. They can only win.
Yeah, yeah.
Dean, you also do something else besides co-direct at the CEPR. What is that?
Well, one of the things I do lots of other things there, but one of the things I do is I have a weekly commentary, online commentary, on the economic reporting in the New York Times and Washington Post. We call it the Economic Reporting Review, which is available on our website, and we also, people can sign up for it and get a free email subscription to it.
And what's that web address?
CEPR.net.
Okay. And that, what you do, the Economic Review?
Economic Reporting Review.
Economic Reporting Review is available at CEPR.net. What other kind of information could our listeners get from visiting that website?
Well, I also have a commentary that I write up when major economic reports come out. So like when the monthly unemployment news comes out, I do a commentary on that. Also quarterly GDP reports, so major economic releases. In addition, my co-director, Mark Weisbrot, has a weekly column that's syndicated on Knight Ridder, and we also put that up on our website. And we also have a number of papers that we've written on issues in globalization, Social Security, many papers that I've written on the stock market bubble, let's see, a few other items on there. We're expanding an area of expanding research for us. We don't have much on the web on it just yet, but we will soon, is the low-wage labor market, the impact of, you know, the Welfare Reform Act of 1996 on workers' living standards. So people find a lot of material on different economic issues on our website.
And I want to thank you so much for joining us today and helping to enlighten and perhaps warn whoever it was that paid attention to your numerous reports on the stock market bubble. Thanks so much for that, Dean.
Thanks a lot for having me on.